This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Once again, the turning of the seasons. Nearly imperceptible here, a shading of the desert heat. But we feel the change in the thrum of our bodies and the texture of the sand. There is rain once in a while, if not here, then somewhere else, surely. Wild spring has stepped in for her stolid winter sister.
It's April and something is different. It's April and the days have depth and vibrance. It's April, and so, dear listeners, Night Vale Community Radio is pleased to present the April Monologues.
Good morning, Night Vale.
Hey, all you babes, it's me, your boo, Symphony.
And it's me, your friend that you met that one time that you hang out sometimes and occasionally like each other's stuff on the internet. But maybe one day you'll hang out again. It probably won't be awkward. Meg.
And hey, don't you know me from somewhere? No, not from that. I'm pretty sure it'll come to me later. I'm Hal. And we are all cast members and Welcome to Night Vale here now to discuss Welcome to Night Vale as we listen to Welcome to Night Vale episode by episode and bring you all the insight you've come to expect from the three of us and more food talk than you ever knew you wanted.
So
let's talk about it.
Oh, by the way, it is April 8th, 2021, the year of our flying spaghetti monster.
Mm-hmm.
Long may he wave.
We are recording this in April, but you won't hear it till May. So it's the April monologues for us, but not for you. So just know that.
April monologues bring May podcasts.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
That's the adage that we've all come to know. So this is the description for this episode. It is April. And once again, something is different. So it's April for us. It's May for you. And once again, as always with Night Vale, something is different.
So let's talk about it.
Let us talk about it. Oh, this episode is so good.
So good.
It's a very good
first
episode.
First of all, Chad.
Chad is Chad. Going through something.
He's going through it. He is going through it. First of all, I've never experienced... This is the most depth that we've gotten out of the faceless old woman up until now. Like, it's all been like... spooky, like she's like behind you messing with your stuff, you know, she wants your Wi-Fi password, she's like running for mayor, like whatever, but she's actually scared and she notices this different. She liked you before, Chad, and now it's different, it's not the same, and we find out in this episode, and it goes very deep and I love it.
Yeah, the faceless old woman being scared is so interesting because in the last episode we had Lucia, who was like straight up a ghost, who was like shooting people on a train, is like tough stuff and has been a ghost for hundreds of years, and she is terrified. She's like, this is not
good. She whipped a guy with a belt.
But yeah, and then she's like, what's going on now in Night Vale is past the point of hope. Like, it's the bad is here. And then we have the faceless old woman who's also had a storied history and it like is the thing that goes bump in the night. And she's afraid. She's like, this is bad. What's happening now is bad. So it's, yeah, we have these two figures warning us. And I feel like we should take them seriously because they, you know, the darkness and the macabre is not something that's new to them. And this is like a different serious bad.
Yeah.
And Meg, do you feel like this was also like kind of one of those things that like was like a almost like a teaser to the Faceless Old Woman book?
Yeah, there's that like little bit of backstory we get in there with her, like the people on the boat,
her living under the sea. Yeah.
Yeah, and then living on the bottom of the ocean. Yeah, the like that stuff.
I said like, living under the sea like she's SpongeBob SquarePants.
Or well, Ariel.
She kind of was. She was for a time.
Oh, that's true.
this alternate history in my mind where the Faceless Old Woman story is she's like, has like, it's just like a little, and she ends up in the Little Mermaid when she's under the sea.
Yeah, she's in the background of that party, of the big party at the beginning when the sisters are singing.
Yes.
Mind canon. Faceless Old Woman has a is cameo in the Little Mermaid.
Oh my God, that would be so funny. Like, just insert Mara Wilson, like, somewhere in, like, a cartoon of Mara Wilson, like, somewhere in the crowd. That would be sick.
I want to be where the people are. I want to see. I want to see them.
That actually was a really good impersonation of the Faceless Old Woman.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, she marks all these changes that happen with Chad. Like, he used to be, like, very neat, like, whatever. All these things. I mean, and honestly, all of these tie in a little bit, except for Michelle's, I would say, like, because Steve's definitely ties in with the face. It very bookends, you know. And we'll get to you in a minute, Hal, talking about Steve.
Hey, I know.
Because that one made me, I was like yelling. I was like, oh my God, like listening to this episode. But he comes back and he's a bit of an occultist. He mentions the Doors and not the band, the Oak Door.
The
Oak
concept. Doors. The thing. Yeah, right.
But yes. And then she's like trying to tell him, like in his sleep, like she's trying to like subliminally put in his head or whatever. But I'm like, he's gone, girl. You know? When she said the thing about the door, when it is a door, not a door, it's a chasm.
Right.
That's spooky shit. And the friggin' puppy came out of there and the puppy can see her. That's not right.
Yeah, that's very creepy.
Nobody can see her, but this puppy can see her and will not leave her alone. And she's like freaked out by it. No, I don't trust it.
It's always so scary when there's a rule change, when there's a rule change with how someone interacts with someone. And it is that it's always so jarring and so scary to have that. Yeah. To have the rules change in a way that is just very uneasy. Cause it's like this puppy has access to the Faceless Old Woman and no one has access to the Faceless Old Woman.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if we can 100% verify this, but the line, "Stop staring at me, you unholy beast, there, Beagle, go fetch your stupid ball," is from "You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown." I'm 99% sure. Just want to get a confirmation on that.
Who do we check with? The Peanuts people?
Are we? Yeah. We'll just ask Joseph. We'll find out.
Is this whole Beagle plotline just like the pages of a Charlie Brown got stuck to the pages of a Stephen King got stuck to the pages of a David Lynch?
It's that thing where you take two books and if you alternate their pages and lock them together, then they become like indestructible and impossible to pull apart.
Yeah.
That's what happened. It just formed a super book.
Yeah. It's just like when you leave things and you leave the comics in the humid bathroom for too long and the pages get stuck together.
That's where all my comics were when I was a kid. All the Sugar and Spikes and Archie Double Digests were all in the bathroom because that was where they were read, either in the bathtub or on the toity.
On the toity.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have Calvin and Hobbes comics on the back of your toilet, I don't know who you are. Like, yeah. You know.
Or Garfield Treasuries.
Garfield. What a terrible cat.
This one, he's coming out of a vault. Oh, he fucking hates Mondays so much. Oh, he hates them.
He does. But he loves lasagna.
He loves lasagna. And his teddy bear Pookie.
Joseph always says that I'm like Garfield because I hate Mondays and I love lasagna.
Oh. Maybe you are closer to it.
And you have red hair.
Yeah, I'm a big orange cat.
Thank you for admitting that right now on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what I look like, I look like Garfield.
Hi.
You know how you always hear that when people are like, oh, yeah, I never did. When you, that happens to, this happens to me a lot. I'm assuming this happens to the two of you when we meet people who only know us for our voices. They're like, I can't believe this is what you look like. And I'm like, yeah, I'm an orange cat.
Surprise.
Like, I know. They're like, I just didn't, this isn't what I pictured. And you're like, well, you know, the imagination can do things.
Yeah, I actually never know how to take that. I'm like, so you don't know how Google works, or
no? They always tell me I expected you to look more like Garfield.
It's the opposite of what happens to me.
You're thinking of Meg.
Yeah,
like I know. Don't get me confused with Meg.
Yeah, I look like Arlene, Garfield's girlfriend, the pink cat with gap tooth. That's me. I'm Arlene the cat. Clearly.
Garfield's girlfriend.
How dare you? Yeah, they were in a long-term relationship.
If I was in that one, who would I be? Not Odie? Am I Odie?
Or John.
You could be Nermal, the world's cutest kitten. You could be John. You could be John's early roommate, Lyman, who then disappeared. You could be Liz, the veterinarian.
No.
And those are your choices of main characters. The Garfield verse is very narrow. I don't... Forget about the, was it U.S. Acres? Which is great. I like the animated stuff, but I mean, give me the core Garfield cinematic universe.
No, I feel like I'm maybe an Odie. I'm a little goofy, a little dumb, like, but not in a bad way, in a sweet way.
In a non-satanic way.
Yeah, you're not satanic at all.
Non-satanic. I am not an evil.
You're not going to run up.
Oh my God! Did he choose this character just so that he could be like his evil beagle? Because that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's official. That's official from the Bashfink house. Then we get into Michelle. Also, I note that I really do enjoy Cecil's little interludes.
Mm-hmm.
The layering of sound I thought was like really cool and like. Almost not otherworldly, but like when something is breaking through a broadcast sort
ethereal-ish.
Of sound. Yeah.
Like a ghost, like when you hear like on another frequency, the aliens are trying to speak with us or there's a coded message.
Yes. That's what I was imagining. That's what I felt like Cecil's little interludes were. And then we come upon Michelle and her burgeoning romance with Maureen. And I love how at the beginning she's like, oh, yeah, I'm like not lonely. I'm the not loneliest person. I was like, but are you, Michelle? You seem pretty lonely. But she likes it that way. She's a very contrary person. Like, she doesn't want to be, like, she is, tries to be cool, or not just tries to be cool. She's cool because she's so exclusive. About things. I think we talked about this a little while ago when we talked about Maureen being cool because she was like unbothered by everything.
Right.
And Michelle is just like, oh, well, I want the most exclusive thing type person. Like her whole hop core.
Oh, hop core.
It's just things of her hopping, which I was like, I squealed when she gave her. First of all, she notices everything about Maureen. Every time she comes in, her hair, her like general demeanor, what her arms are doing, things like that, which is very cute. And then the other person that keeps coming in and asking her for stuff, asking her for like the Beatles, she's like buzz off, go to the second floor. It's not a second floor. But I think it's really cute that she's like so focused on Maureen, right?
Yeah, I found her to be very vulnerable in this monologue and very much wanting to be liked and wanting to saying that she's, you know, alone, but it's fine being alone. It's like very clear that she's not. And like, maybe she thought she was fine being alone, but then she found Maureen and was like, maybe I'd like to not be alone because I'd like to be with this person. And I found it very sweet, like almost a little sad, her kind of desire to be liked and her like cuteness with Maureen and the hop core. And the bees and playing music, like giving Maureen music. And it just felt very like Because I had before this, I had pictured Michelle as like a more of a harder hearted character.
Yeah.
She didn't care. She wanted to be cool, and she desperately cared that you saw her as cool. But like,
right.
She had this kind of hard surface, and mm-hmm. that kind of hard surface is melted away a little bit, and she allows more of her humanity to show through and more of her vulnerability to show through because she wants to be liked by a specific person, and that she doesn't want all of us to think she's cool. She wants Maureen to think she's cool, and that's it's really sweet.
Yeah, I do. I like that vulnerability as well. See, I was actually the opposite. I saw her as hard, but also, like, if there was an insecurity, it was really, really deep down. And this bringing it to the surface. It's a really, really great performance, too. That it just I like seeing that vulnerability evolve. It's fun to watch characters fall in love because they each do it differently.
Yeah.
Just like people. Every person, there may be things we have in common about falling in love with someone, or the initial infatuation, where there are patterns that we can all talk about that's common, but the experience is so different for every single person. That's what makes it so beautiful.
Yeah. I think it requires the person to change in a way to... Because no two people are 100% compatible for anything all the time. And I think a lot mm-hmm. of what falling in love is recognizing what you're okay with changing about yourself to fit the other person better. And like sort of parts of you that you might need to bring more forward to be there. And allowing yourself to be loved, like finding that vulnerability, being like, I can strip this, it's going to hurt so bad, but I can strip this one little layer off just to see if that's okay.
Well, and also just like maybe discovering things that about yourself that you didn't even know that you could access, you know, like you, maybe you didn't know you're willing to do those things because you didn't even realize that you could feel that way about someone. And that is a very powerful feeling, as we all know, love is. It can be very, very powerful and scary at times, especially when you're trying to change maybe the way that you've come to live or come to know yourself to be and realize that there's other facets to yourself. So I'm not mad about it. I like to see it in Michelle. And actually, I feel like we see a much more vulnerable side of everyone in this episode. I mean, even Steve, who I think is probably our most vulnerable and open character in this grouping, mm-hmm. still shows us a bit of vulnerability that I wasn't aware could be accessed because of how he reacts to Chad. Poor Chad. But yeah, before we talk about Steve, I'm so sorry. Nope. Let's go back to Michelle for one more second. When she was talking about silence, that really struck a chord with me because I'm very sensitive to sound, and especially when I'm being very quiet, like if I'm trying to sleep or something like that. I live in a city, so I'm used to, you know, external sounds. Actually, most of us live in cities. Meg, you've lived in a city. You don't live in a city now, but... So we're used to some sort of extraneous sounds. Like even when it's quiet, I say that with quotation marks, even when it's quiet, you hear like Michelle's talking about like the hum of certain things that become often sort of a white noise sort of feeling. So much so that you notice this subtle and slight changes in that silence. Do you guys ever experience that? I don't know if I'm being crazy, but like I feel that all the time. Yes, Symphony, you are crazy.
I don't think you're being crazy, no.
Okay.
no. It's the varying degrees of silence, especially when the outside is very loud. It can be, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you can feel. We're intuitive people. We can feel when something is changing. And in a silence, it almost is more obvious. Because you can't obfuscate it with words or even physical cues. Like it just everything gets betrayed and laid bare So yeah. I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay, good. And then finally, the Beatles, but dubstep.
Yeah.
I remember a time where I was one of the younger personal trainers at the gym that I worked at for a while, and one of them asked a question about dubstep in like the office, and I tried to explain it to them like this. I was like, dubstep is like electronic dance music, but with machine sounds. It's like, like the AOL startup, dial-up sound, but with a more of a beat under it. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, I know that sounds like probably like an old boomer sort of expression, but like, that's what it sounds like.
Let me young it up. Dubstep is like electronic music that's hitting you in the head with a tennis racket over and over again. And you're like, when does this stop? I don't like being hit in the head with a tennis racket. I sure wish that this tennis racket would stop hitting me in the head. This is a 7-minute song? All right. I guess I'll wake up in a hospital or something.
I kind of like the dubstep.
Of like, course you do.
I'm not like going to like listen to it.
So
I'm not
young.
Like, you're a millennial. You're an elder millennial.
I'm not like, we're going on a road trip. Let me get my dubstep on. But I like that it exists. But I'm like, it's just so wild and weird. And like,
it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I find particularly enjoyable, but... You know, sometimes we don't have to enjoy things to have to be appreciative of their downright bizarreness.
Yeah, or that they can just exist. Honestly, I just feel like I enjoy certain dubstep elements because I do enjoy electronic dance music and electronic music, or even when it's brought into a pop song. Like one, like. Little bit is cool, but like I don't think I'm gonna be listening to an album, a dubstep album.
No,
a full record.
I understand that if you were to like, I don't know, drink a bunch of Red Bull and maybe take some party drugs and then like be in an environment where this is happening, you could really lose yourself in that music. Like it's because as Hal just mentioned, it's like a head injury. Like you really, your perceptions are, so yeah, I guess like if you're trying to cultivate that vibe, it's never a vibe that I want to cultivate because my my vibe is snacks and lounging and like looking at animals.
Watching Chopped.
Yeah. Watching having the Home and Garden Network or the Food Network on while I'm in my pajamas at 7:30 p.m. at a Hampton Inn. But... So,
I can't wait for the day that someone much younger than me goes into a department store and then like listens to the music being played and is like, is that Skrillex?
Is that Deadmau?
Yeah, they're playing Skrillex at the grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah, their music has been Percy Faithed. It's going to happen.
It's just Muzak.
It'll just sound like Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, that like boom, ding, boom, boom, rah, 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 rah. That's where you're going. Dubstep, it happens to everybody. Everybody's music gets turned into Muzak. It just happens. Get ready. You're not better than us.
Just you wait. Mm-hmm. So transitioning into Steve. Speaking of quiet, we hear a little bit about Steve's quiet moments. It's very much like a day in the life of the gentle day of Steve Carlsberg.
Yeah, it is a weird, like, it's just sort of an aside that he plants the idea for puppies. Like, he touches, it feels like a big mistake by him. But also, these ideas are like, oh, maybe it's Abby's turn to make dinner. Like, for him, these weird things, his everyday is like a normal suburban life. And then these weird things are sort of little off ramps and rest stops. Whereas most of Night Vale lives in the weird stuff all the time. And that becomes their regular, that's their sort of regular life. But if you look at like his sort of the pattern, the details, the context clues you get about him and the stories he tells, there is like an element of he's pulled into this rather than he lives in it.
Right.
If that makes sense. I mean, it's a little, you can't be in Night Vale and not have it.
The island of this family, mm-hmm. right? Like, which says that you have a bit of isolation at least.
Or sanctuary.
Sanctuary, where you're like, we are in this pod together and it is wonderful within here, right?
Yeah. And even like this horrific exchange, you know, this weird exchange with Chad leads to like, maybe I'll get Janice a puppy. But not the puppy that he's talking about. That's just weird.
Because, yeah, because Chad and Steve both have this shared knowing from the World Government Agency. And the way that Steve is able to kind of metabolize that into his life is that he has this family life. He has this routine. He has this, like, safe place for him and his family. And Chad doesn't have that. And Chad is so unmoored by what he has seen that he's looking for any place to figure it out and put it and fix it. And Steve is just like, I don't know, get a puppy. Like, don't stop trying to dig into this. It's not going to be good. It's just going to keep hurting you. Like, back away from it, find somewhere else to go. This is where I go. So yeah, I kind of, in my head, it was a metaphor. It was like, this is like a metaphor for going into like a combat military situation. And they both have been to war, and like, this is, Chad has nothing to come home to and is all fucked up. And Steve was able to come back but has a family and a support system. And that's why he hasn't had to turn to the literal devil.
Well, and it also shows how he's interpreted the information he has. When he, you know, when Chad sees it as a map, and so he's looking for somewhere to go, and Steve sees it as a labyrinth filled with monsters.
Right.
So, you know, he's aware because he has some more experience that there is danger involved in this. And maybe at a younger age, he would have been more reactionary, but it doesn't really seem like Steve's thing. Steve wants to be of service. That's kind of his whole sort of thing. He wants to help people, and he knows that they can't see what he sees as much as he wants them to. And so even offering the advice, like, there's nothing to do but no. Like, there is no action to take right now. There's nothing to be done. You're looking to do something when that's not really the way to go. And so in trying to be helpful, he's like, just go get a puppy, which makes it worse.
Well, but to be fair to Steve, Steve does strongly encourage him to adopt, because he says summon a puppy, and he's like, summon, no, I said adopt. He's like, adopt, adopt. And then I wrote, adopt, don't summon. So, like, adopt, don't shop.
That should be a tote bag.
Yeah, I should put that as a merch. Yeah, I'll put it on a dog collar.
Yeah.
Adopt, don't summon.
I'm going to put that and make a note of that in my email. Yeah,
everything he does is well-meaning. But he also, like, for someone who knows how things are laid out at a level that most people don't, he's incredibly unaware of a lot of other things, including taking cues off of people in their interactions. Like, he really fails. He fails at that personal interactive level, whereas he can see the whole chessboard, but he can't see, if he's just looking at two pieces, what's going on. Like, he can't break that down, as if to say, like, no, you're talking about something really dangerous. It's rather like, summon, no, adopt. I think you're mixed up. I think that's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, I just wrote, God damn it, Steve Carlsberg.
Yep. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. But also, I think part of the reason why they may see things differently, like you said, is Steve has an anchor. He has this normal life, this sanctuary. He's got someone he loves. He's got a child. That Chad obviously didn't have at all. Chad is completely alone. So that made him more susceptible to whatever is going on.
Yeah, because he doesn't have that other thing to, like, live for or whatever. And I love that he brought up the whole thing about him being an intern.
Yeah.
And so technically, it's kind of Cecil's fault.
Yeah.
I mean, because he did send him there to the store or whatever. Yep. So, I mean,
This is the episode where the loop closes on Chad, because there's intern Chad, there's Chad that Faceless Old Woman talks about in the September monologues. And then there's the boy that's hanging out with Maureen. And we find out that those three Chads are all the same Chad. So the loop is closed, that it's Cecil's former intern. It's the haunter of Faceless, the Faceless Old Woman haunter. And then
that's why he's like, that guy looks familiar.
Yeah.
Because Cecil doesn't even really pay that good of attention. Wow. Dude, come on. Cecil, do better. Do better.
I got this script like maybe a few weeks before, like as normal. I think it was Joseph who reached out to me and was like, hey, we have another script. If you're willing to record it, we just need it by whatever date.
Right.
And so I came into it like I was not – I'm a regular listener now, but at the time I wasn't listening. I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't know how it related to any – like I didn't get a full script with everybody's part in it to even relate it back to Mara's stuff. It was just, here's your monologue. And then I went and just performed it like it was his story, which may work. Maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't work. It's hard to tell. Like, I don't know.
It does work. I mean, we're able to draw those conclusions together without knowing that. I mean, even though we do know how Joseph and Jeffrey work, I mean,
yeah,
but it's still like, it did work. It tied all of it together. Like I said, I think it perfectly bookended this story, and it tied together some loops, some like holes that we had been, like Meg said, that we had been questioning, thinking about, that had been a major arc, major part of this arc.
I'm also glad that I didn't have a full grasp of what was happening, because Steve doesn't know all that stuff. Steve doesn't know what ties together. So I shouldn't know either. Because if I do, it's hard to have that not sneak into your performance.
Your reading. Yeah.
Your reading. Like that knowledge of, all right, well, this ties in and, you know, this is the Chad from several months ago, but also this Chad and like, it's better to just know, like, it's just a moment of his life. This is a short conversation that he had with Chad. Chad's not the star of Steve Carlsberg's movie. he's you know, he's just a day player who walked through.
I mean, I agree. Like, you got to be blissfully ignorant to the stuff that you are ignorant of. Like, it's hard to be knowing what's going to happen at the end and then pretend like you don't when you're acting, you know?
Right.
It's not impossible.
It's just another challenge. It wouldn't have added anything, I don't think. Yeah.
It's not obviously, like, everybody, you've read Romeo and Juliet. Like, if you played Romeo, like, you wouldn't be like, oh, it ruined it. Like, you'd still be able to play the character. It would just change the way that you said things. And it's like Schrodinger's cat of acting.
Yes. And there's no, I don't think it would have plussed the performance at all to have known.
Right.
It wouldn't have added anything, I don't think. But who knows? Who knows?
We'll never know now.
We won't. We'll never, ever know. The fake out with the weather is also fun in this.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And not the first time Steve has interrupted the weather and back and forth. I feel like there are other times coming up where I throw to the weather but then come back early.
Does he do it in September monologues?
Yeah, I feel like little clips. There's clips in there as well.
Right. But there's another one I'm thinking of that I think has it more direct. Or maybe this is the one I was thinking of where the fake out is the weather, they come back and say, well, that's a conspiracy too. It's cloud seeding and it's just a fun way to twist the convention.
Well, let's talk about that right now. Up next, we hear from fans and friends of the podcast, but first, a conversation about this episode's weather. This episode's weather is Fisher Lid by The Klezmatics.
An uncredited weather.
Yeah,
right.
Secret weather.
Oh, uncredited, because it was like so short?
Yes. So we've only been turned down outright by a weather artist where we have asked, hey, can we use your song on this podcast? And they have said back to us, no. And The Klezmatics is one of those three.
Oh.
So
but you can use under 20 seconds, right?
We used a fair use chunk or a whether it's fair use or not, whether it, hey, don't come for us, Les Maddox, it's only 20 seconds. Yeah, so Joseph is a, I think maybe I've talked about this on the show. Joseph is a huge fan of the Klezmatics, grew up with their music, loves them, is always just, yeah. So like it really stung when he was like, hey, could you, do you guys want to be the weather on my show? And they were like, no, don't talk to us. but this is Joseph, so when I was talking to him about it today, he's like, this is a great song. You should listen to it in its entirety. It's called Fisher Lid. It's based on a Yiddish poem, which was written by the very famous Yiddish poet, Aliza Greenblatt, who is, fun fact, Woody Guthrie's second wife's mother. So it's Woody Guthrie's mother-in-law, which is interesting because we talk about Woody Guthrie in this episode and we make jokes about Woody Guthrie a lot in terms of Dark Owl. So
what?
It's all connected. It's all connected.
Crazy.
The arrows in the sky, I mean.
For real. For real. So yeah, so there's a little nod to Woody Guthrie in the song, and his mother-in-law is the one who penned the poem for which this song is based.
Whew. Wow. Well, crazy. I thought it was a great little interlude, and I wrote the transition to the weather LOL short clip. Because it was like such a like quick thing. It's like almost like you almost didn't notice that it happened. You were just like, what? I was like almost startled by it because it was like, bunk, 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 bunk. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fun. But now I'm going to go listen to the whole thing.
I will never listen to more than that 20 seconds. They said no.
That's true. Like, I mean, just out of...
They might not. It's also possible that whoever was answering their emails was just like, you know, they just say no to stuff like that. If you don't know what's up, you're not probably like, and you don't have the time or energy to figure out what you're actually signing up for, you might just say no. So it's not, right. Listen, we have no ill will.
No hard feelings.
The Klezmatics and their music and their, and all the stuff that they do. It's just, yeah. Just broke little Joseph Inc's heart.
Ah. Nobody puts Joseph in a corner, but we will put him in a calzone.
Yes. Wrap him up in the warmth of a calzone.
Oh, yeah. That'll keep him nice and toasty.
A fanzone calzone.
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
Let's slice it open and see what's in there.
Ka-cha! That's a slicing sound. first up, we have Kyle. Kyle writes, hello, Meg, Symphony, and Hal.
Hello.
First off, I wanted to thank all three of you for making 2020 a bearable year for myself, and I'm sure many others. Well, let's hope so, Kyle. Kyle continues, I have been re-listening to the episodes alongside you guys, and it's been a wonderful experience. I wanted to write about an experience I had on my first listen to the series a few years ago and pose a question to the three of you. As a straight white male, I am very aware of my privilege and try very hard to understand the hardships others face, as well as be an advocate as much as I can. I feel a responsibility to use my privilege to help others if ever possible. However, in episode 85, the April monologues, I have never had something slam a dose of reality down my throat before. I was listening to Michelle's portion as she talks about her loneliness. And when she starts talking about Maureen, normally I would probably think that they should become friends. However, this time my immediate thought was, oh my God, they would make the cutest couple. It hit me shortly after that. I rarely, if ever, immediately assumed characters were queer. I always assume that they are straight and deviate from there. It really made me think about how much Night Vale puts an emphasis on inclusion and has truly created a world that no amount of real life could have done for me. This is something I will forever be grateful to the show for, allowing me to open my mind up to things I never imagined. My question to the three of you is, have you ever had a moment either within the podcast or the live shows, which changed your view of the world or made you realize something you may have taken for granted. Thank you all for everything you do, and I hope to see you all live soon. Best wishes, Kyle. Thanks, Kyle.
I love that our gay propaganda is working.
Yes.
Propaganda.
The gay agenda is working.
Yes, for real. I don't know. I mean, I think this is just me and how I take any sort of input that I get from entertainment. I take everything as it comes to me. So I'm rarely surprised by something. Like, I get excited by stuff. I'm like, oh, that's cool or that's neat. But I'm willing to accept whatever the world is telling me. So you're telling me that in Night Vale, XYZ happens. Okay, that's what I'll go with. But I do agree with you that the inclusion that Night Vale has is wonderful for people who may not have been able to experience that idea of seeing themselves in media, in a story before. So, and I hope that many other people experience the same thing you experienced. So, while I can't think of one off the top of my head, I would say that I enjoy all the inclusion that we have, whether gender, racial, political, amoebus, blob type formations, all sorts of life and love. Love of every kind. Am I right, Meg?
Every kind. Yeah. Kyle, thank you so much for writing in. It's really interesting when you realize that your worldview has changed and has changed maybe because of some sort of art that you're consuming. And I had a moment with this show with Welcome to Night Vale, specifically with the first Megan Wallaby episode where it's talking about the accommodations needed for Megan to be involved in the community. And there's a point in the episodes where it's like, yeah, this isn't super easy for us to do, but we should just do it because it makes it accessible for her. And that's the important thing. And so that kind of clicked me being like, yeah, we should just do it. Like, it doesn't matter if it's hard or easy or whatever to make something accessible. What matters is that it's accessible to the person. That's the thing that matters the most. And so and this was like a couple of years back. So this was really before there was the really recent forward motion as far as disabled rights and accessibility. But it was during that, listening to that, I was like, yeah, we should do this. I'm so tired of hearing excuses about like, oh, well, it's going to cost money to build the ramp, or oh, like we can't, you know, do mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z. Like, just, we should do it. And the episode when it was like, it spoke to me being like, yeah, this is the right, like, this is what everything I've been told before about why there's barriers to entry is bullshit. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
yeah.
You know what? I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I'm so wrong. I was wrong. The story about you, when I automatically assumed that the story was about a male character, that you was a male or something, because they had a wife, I think. So that's like super heteronormative thought. So that sort of thing was very interesting to me. But all right, go ahead, Hal.
I was going to say the easy answer is probably the Old Oak Doors monologue that I did, but the truth is just the Night Vale community in general and meeting all the people that I've had the privilege to meet and see around all over North America, that is an important thing and has certainly not eye-opening, but just a heightened awareness. Mm-hmm. And the challenge in overcoming privilege is remembering to be aware of it. And it's not something to be pitied and go, it's so hard. It's just, it takes work to change. It takes work to be aware of things. It takes work to be inclusive and to have that mindset. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And then you start to see it in other places, which is a really, really great thing. But it does, you know, You have to keep working it and take what you learn from either a fictional podcast or experiences around it and look at every place in the world that it applies. And the more of us that are aware of it and trying to point it out to other people and try to participate in a solution in any way that we can. That's how we get better as a society.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag do better.
Yeah, keep using your white maleness to the benefit of everyone, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Yeah, for good and not for evil.
Yeah,
that's right.
Don't be a stranger. You know,
that's right.
See how it ties in?
An evil stranger. Yeah.
Yeah, don't be an evil stranger. Be a goodie.
Ladies, I have a communique from Catherine.
Oh, tell us about it.
Catherine writes, "Hello, Symphony, Meg, and Hal. I've been a huge fan of Night Vale for years and even got my girlfriend and mom into the fandom. It's thanks to her that we got to see a few amazing live shows that my girlfriend and I cosplayed at. We were Michelle and Maureen. I don't have many theories to say since most have already been discussed, but I like to think that every episode we hear is from a different Night Vale, since many endings make it sound like everyone died. I also think that Cecil's show is a daily one, but the episodes we hear are the most important or interesting ones." I agree with that. "I love your show as it helps me get through work and gives me a look into how others enjoy the show differently. You're all wonderful people, and I hope you stay safe and happy during these weird and scary times." Thank you, Catherine. Thank you very much. I think those are valid theories. I wonder if, like, I know that we talk about gaps in time, but because time's so weird at Night Vale, maybe these are just all consecutive episodes and we're getting them without a break. Think about that. Noodle on that, Catherine.
That would be wild if it was like every day was something like wild and crazy like this. But it just, it always comes back to like old acting training, Stanislavski's type things, like whatever. It's like this moment. Right? Why this moment? Right? Like, why is this important to see? Because this could be any day, right? This could just be any regular day. You go to the store, you get a banana, you come home, and that's it, right? Yeah. But like, why do we need to be here looking at this, hearing this, seeing this? So that's the way I think about it. But that would be wild if it was every freaking day was like street sweeping day and then Strax Corp. And then you're like, what the hell?
All right. And for the last one. "Hi there, Symphony, Hal, and Meg. Big fan of your show. I'm writing because me and my inner voice have come up with a theory for everyone's favorite music hipster, Michelle Wynn. I believe that Michelle suffers from a severe case of tinnitus from all those years of listening to music. The thing is that Michelle actually likes the buzzing, so that's why she prefers silent music and being alone. Also, it would explain why her favorite album is just a bunch of B sounds. Regards, from Mysterious Anonymous." She blew out her eardrums, and so she just really likes the quiet of, yeah, it's really...
Oh. Just imagine me as that emoji that has the, like, blue draining head and then that hand on the side of the face with the mouth open, because that's what I look like right now. That would be so freaking wild. Not out of the realm of possibility, no?
No, it's really funny that this person who owns a music store, like, her favorite thing is silence. So, or B sounds, or the sounds of, like, soft socks hopping on a carpet, like very ASMR stuff.
Yeah. And that's her idea of a something to give a somebody you like a mixtape. I mean, because that's what we used to do back in the day. You give somebody you like a mixtape, right?
We had mixed CDs in my day. We were able to get to the burn. We burned each other's CDs. Yeah.
Cute.
And now people have their, I guess, their Spotify playlists. I don't know. We'll have to see if our Gen Z correspondent can let us know how people express their feelings through music. Is it a Spotify playlist or is there something else that is just,
would you just send each other
TikToks? Yeah, just let us know.
TikTok, yeah.
If Katie, our Gen Z correspondent, could reach out. Anyway, we'll check back in on that.
Hashtag help us, Katie.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Welcome to Night Vale. Thank you so much for being you out there in this big, scary, beautiful world. The next episode we're going to be tackling together is standing and breathing. We appreciate all of your support by engaging with this show, either through our Patreon or through just listening to it or through whatever way you are connecting to us. If you're hearing our voice right now, we love you. We appreciate you. And as always, good morning, Night Vale. Good morning. Good Morning Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwiner. It is edited and mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwiner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our fans who submitted their thoughts this week. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com. to share your theories and ask questions, or to tell me which first 10 years virtual book event you will be attending. Will it be the one hosted by Symphony on May 13th or the one hosted by Hal on May 24th? Is it both? It's okay to say both. The events are free and guarantee fun. Limit one fun per attendee while supplies last. More info about the first 10 years book and book events at welcometonightvale.com/books. This show is powered by our patrons like Nathaniel Grubbs, Richard Young, Adam Kennedy, Lindsay Schneider, and Brittany Alvey. If you are interested in supporting this show in exchange for lots of fun, exclusive, hyper cool kid content, check us out at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more info on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Night Vale Chat. Special thanks to Joella Knapp, Jeffrey Craner, and Joseph Fink. Today's adverb is retroactively. I am retroactively changing the adverb section to the abstract calzone ingredients section. This week's abstract ingredients are memories of good but weird smells, new puppy, new car, a new dry erase marker.
From the creators of Welcome to Night Vale, Alice Isn't Dead, and Within the Wires comes a new Audible original. Unlicensed. In the outskirts of Los Angeles, where the cul-de-sacs and strip malls sprawl into the desert, two unlicensed private investigators scrape by on whatever small cases come their way. But when a teenage girl pleads for them to take the strangest case of their career, this unlikely pair, with no resources and no backup, will follow a trail of seemingly unconnected cases, which will lead them to a ransom, a murder, a mysterious wellness center, and a conspiracy that might go all the way to the governor.
It's important to catch small fires early. They don't stay small for long.
Unlicensed. Available now at audible.com/unlicensed.